Good morning.
Good morning.
So if at any time that I'm talking, I see anyone in the room doing something that looks like this, I will not be offended. I will assume it means that I'm saying something that you think that someone else who's not in this room should hear. And if that's the case, that's my Twitter handle. Okay? T-D-U-F-U. My success equation today is not falling off of this stage because I can't really see the screen very well. So bear with me as I do a bit of leaning in. They did not pay me to say that. A couple of months ago, I was in a meeting at work. I got a call at about 3 o'clock. It was from my daughter's school. I immediately kind of scooted out and answered the phone. It was the nurse. My daughter was crying uncontrollably. Right after school, all of her friends left to go to a birthday party that she knew nothing about. And she felt devastated. Okay? Really sad story, right?
Yeah.
So there's more to this story. This exact scenario plays out a few times every school year. And to make matters worse, I can anticipate that this scenario was going to happen. There's something that I could do to prevent this from happening, but I don't. Intentionally. On purpose. Now, before you start throwing stones at me because I must be a very, very terrible mother, I want to take you back in time to explain how it is that our family got to this moment and to this point. My life's work is advancing women and girls, as you heard. It's pretty much why I'm on the planet. So my life is very, very simple. I basically already know what's on my tombstone, and I'm just kind of project managing my life backwards at this point. And right now, I feel really lucky that I get to execute my purpose as Chief Leadership Officer at Levo, which is a platform for millennial women to help them elevate their careers. I also get to execute my purpose as a public speaker and as a consultant for Fortune 500 companies to help them figure out how do we retain and grow all of the women that we're recruiting that we're losing in droves, quite frankly. I also am able to execute my purpose as an author, and yes, my book will be available today, but I also spend a great deal of time volunteering for nonprofit boards that I care deeply about, like Girl Scouts USA, like Girls Who Code. And right now, in this moment, I feel really lucky that I get to execute my purpose with all of you. I have been obsessed about women and leadership for a very long time. And if you're not aware, which all of you I'm sure should be by now, we have a leadership crisis on our hands. Okay? Women occupy about 46% of entry-level roles in corporate America, but by the time you get to the C-suite, we're at about 19%. Same thing in politics. We're pretty much half the population, but we're represented at about 20%. In fact, across every single sector of our society, women are leading on average at about 18%, despite the fact that we're about 50% of people on the planet. And the general public, when you poll them, swear that they're very comfortable with women in leadership. In fact, there's only three areas of leadership, three sectors, so to speak, that when you poll Americans, they'll tell you, I'm not quite sure about women. We call that guns, games, and God. The military, if you ask people, some people will honestly say, I'm not quite sure. Games, sports, there are some sports, there are places where people say, I'm not quite sure, and God. Right? There are people who practice certain religions who have very strong opinions about women and women's roles. But other than that, we say that we're very comfortable with women in leadership. Despite that, we've still been at these numbers, and we've been at these numbers for about 20 years. The numbers really haven't changed that much. Now, sometimes people ask, Tiffany, why are you so obsessed? Why do you care so much about women in leadership? And part of that goes back to this experience that I used to have when I was growing up. My dad had this conspiracy theory, let's call it, about how there was this small group of elite people that ran the world. It was kind of like the man, you've heard of the man, except it was more insidious because they were plural. And he used to warn me about these people. I would be very embarrassed when my friends would come over and he would say something about these people. And I used to think that my dad was crazy. Okay? Of course, over time, I came to understand that my dad isn't that crazy. He still has these beliefs, by the way. He doesn't step foot into a Sears because many, many years ago, they did not give him a credit card. And he has a whole conspiracy theory about this, okay? Over time, though, I've realized that he's not so crazy after all, because there are, in fact, at the highest levels of leadership, people who make decisions that impact every single one of us. And they sit and make these decisions in rooms that look like this, usually a big wooden marble table. There's lots of chairs around it. And since the founding of our country, though there are a few exceptions that we celebrate, and I love to celebrate, the vast majority of people that are sitting around these tables are male, and they're white, and they're straight, and they're wealthy, and they're able-bodied. And the challenge with this, now don't get me wrong, I have a lot of friends who were white and straight and male and wealthy and able-bodied. They're very well-intentioned, okay? It's just that we've done enough research to now know that if you have a problem and you're trying to solve it, that a diverse group of people, people with different backgrounds and different perspectives, coming to the table to solve that problem makes for a more innovative outcome, a more innovative solution. So it only makes sense that if we've got really, really complex problems in this world, which we do right now at this very moment, that we should all aspire to have more people sitting around those tables who reflect all of our thoughts and experiences. To me, it doesn't matter so much if you care about the economy or healthcare or education or what's happening in corporate America. The biggest crisis, the biggest problem that we have is that we don't have enough women, people of color, members of the LGBT community, people with disabilities sitting around these tables making those decisions. And that's why women and leadership is something that I talk a lot about. So here's the thing. For most of my career, I've been focused on why is it that we can't get more women into leadership? And a few years ago, I had this, what I call a Tiffany's epiphany. And I have to tell you, it was such an obvious aha moment that I'm embarrassed to say that it was an aha moment. But you know, it occurred to me that people who are at the highest levels of leadership have big jobs and that their roles require a lot of work to execute, right? Enormous amount of work. And here's the thing. Women are already doing an enormous amount of work. Now, if you are already doing an enormous amount of work, if you have a lot of things on your plate, do you feel like adding more? Do you feel inspired to add more? Okay. So I started thinking about the relationship between women's leadership in the public sphere, right, and the lack thereof, and women's leadership in the private sphere, and the overabundance of women's leadership in the private sphere, and the relationship between the two. And part of the reason why I kept thinking about this is because not only do women have a lot of work, we have very high expectations about how we should be performing our work. I was reading this magazine a little while ago, and it was this study on millennials and parenting. And in this issue of Time Magazine, they reported that 80% of millennial women felt that it was important to be the perfect mother. Okay? 80%. If you are in this room and you are a mother, if you've ever had a mother, if you know a mother, I'm pretty certain that you're aware cognitively that they are not perfect, okay? And yet 80% of millennial women felt that they should be the perfect mother. That should be a goal, that they should strive to be that, even though we all know that that's virtually impossible. In 2013, I did a lot of public speaking, and when I spoke publicly about women in leadership, I was always focused on collective solutions. We really need equal pay for equal work. We need affordable childcare policies. We need workplace flexibility. We need cultures where women can really bring their full selves to the table. And I'm still an advocate for all of those things, and they're extremely important. But I kept having this experience that didn't really make sense to me until another Tiffany's epiphanies, which was that every time I would speak on a stage for about 45 minutes to an hour and talk about all these collective solutions, and then I would open it up for the Q&A, I would immediately get questions that to me were personal questions that had nothing to do with what I just talked about. Okay? So literally, I would be done and I would say, okay, does anyone have a question? And a woman would raise her hand and she would say, yeah, I have a question. So during your talk, you said something about your 7-year-old daughter, and then you said something about your 10-year-old son. And you also mentioned that you have a husband, but he's in Dubai right now. And you're here in San Francisco with us, but you live in New York. Tomorrow you're going to be in Baltimore. I like your dress, and your shoes are great too. And you seem kind of fit, almost like you've never even been on a diet. And you seem happy and healthy, and you have this career that's all about passion and purpose. And I'm just wondering, how are you doing all of this? And all of the other women in the audience would be like, yep, that's what I've been wondering too. Okay? So I used to have this one-liner that I would give whenever I got this, to me, very personal question. I would say, oh, I just expect far more from my husband and far less from myself than the average woman. And everyone would laugh just like that. And then I would try to move the audience onto what I felt were more substantive questions about public policy and corporate practices. Okay? This was my experience over and over again. One day, I was literally answering the final question, and I stepped back from the podium, and all of a sudden, I had another Tiffany's epiphany. And it was a voice that said, Tiffany, they are not trying to get up all in your business. In fact, it's not about you. The reason why women keep asking you, how do you manage it all, is because they're asking themselves, how can I manage it all? And if your life's work is advancing women and girls, you owe them a better answer to that question. You owe them a better answer than that little one-liner that you give to give laughs, to get laughs, and then try to move them on. One of the women who has invested in me is a woman named Marie Wilson. She built the Ms. Foundation for Women. She started Take Our Daughters to Work Day. She co-founded the White House Project, which is an organization that trained women to run for office, and I used to run that organization. And one of the things that Marie Wilson used to always tell me is, Tiffany, if you want to create real change in the world, you're going to have to meet people where they are. You can't expect people to come to where you are. And in that moment, as I was stepping back from the podium, I realized that I hadn't been following Marie Wilson's teachings, right? That here I was on a stage imposing my ambition on all of these women that they should aspire to be CEOs and to be senators and to start their own empires. But what women were saying to me was, Tiffany, yeah, we get that. But right now, we're just trying to figure out how do we get out of the house on time with everyone with the right backpack, right? Like, that's what I'm trying to figure out today. And can we address that so that I could at least begin to think about all of these other big goals and dreams that you have for me? Part of the reason why it was very difficult for me to consider answering these questions is because in order to do so, I would have to speak the truth, which is that the woman that everyone was seeing on the stage was like the new and improved Tiffany, okay? Wasn't the Tiffany of yesteryear, wasn't the vintage Tiffany. And I particularly was nervous about sharing my own story about how I was able to really manage it all, because I would have to share what I felt was a very dirty feminist secret. And my dirty feminist secret was that even though for my entire career, publicly, I advocated for women's non-traditional roles in the public sphere, at home, I was on Stepford Wife autopilot. Okay? And I particularly had a very bad case of what I call HCD, home control disease. This is basically when you feel that everything in your home should be done a certain way, your way. For example, I used to cook all of the time, and I like fresh food, which means that there are always leftovers in the fridge. Let's say on Monday I made meatloaf, and then on Tuesday I made fajitas, and then on Wednesday I made fried chicken. If on Thursday I was at a work event and my husband was at home and he was eating dinner, I would expect him to eat the meatloaf first, because I had a running expiration date, right, in my head for all of the leftovers in the refrigerator. Now, If I came home and he had eaten the fried chicken, I would have asked him, why didn't you eat the meatloaf? And he'd be like, I really like your fried chicken. Right? And then my response would be, so you don't like my meatloaf? And then he would know not to say anything, because it's kind of like that skid prevention on a car to avoid, you know, the deadly crash. Okay. Now, this may seem very small. This may be very inconsequential, the difference between meatloaf and fried chicken, when we're talking about equal pay for equal work or affordable childcare. But here's the thing. I had these little quirks and obsessions about a lot of different things at home. For example, I felt that it was very important that all of the hangers and all of the closets face the same direction. Okay? I also felt that it was very important that you retrieve the mail from the mailbox every day and that you sort through it. Because if you didn't, it was going to pile up and then that would just be more work for me. Right? I also felt that when you received a birthday party invitation, you should RSVP right away. Otherwise, someone might think that you were rude. Worse yet, you may not show up to the party if you didn't get it in your calendar. Now, I want to be very clear. Even though I had a lot of these obsessions that added up to a tremendous amount of work for me, I might add, I thought of myself as a very modern, forward-thinking, empowered woman. Okay? Despite the fact that if you had have done an analysis of the division of household labor, the division of household responsibilities in my home in 1997, yes, I've been married for 20 years, stop doing the math in your head, okay? It would have been virtually the same as a couple in 1957. Really not that much of a difference. I, personally, was able to keep up with fast-forwarding a very ambitious career that was focused on my passion and purpose, and managing my home flawlessly for a long time, until I had this life-changing experience called a child. Okay? And then, as you all can imagine, it kind of spiraled downhill. And it was very, very tough because I could not keep up with keeping floors pristine. I could not keep up with the mail. I could not keep up with all of the expiration dates in the refrigerator and throwing things out. Things started to like grow. I was afraid that if I opened my refrigerator, things would come like flying out. I got really sick and I got depressed and I was always tired and I was always exhausted and I lost a lot of weight. And I'm not like, there's not that much to lose. It was very, very sad. And I got so overwhelmed and distressed that eventually I did the one thing that I was always most terrified of. I dropped the ball. I dropped a lot of balls. But something really amazing happened. The world actually didn't fall apart. Like, no one came to read me my Miranda rights because I didn't pay that parking ticket. No one was giving me evil glances because I hadn't responded to what was in the mail. And over time, I took myself through this journey, this evolution that I call dropping the ball, that I want to share with you a little bit about, because it was very, very important, and because I think it's part of, I think, the key to how we can get more women into leadership. When I first started dropping the ball, I thought of dropping the ball as something very, very bad and very scary, which is why it terrified me. If you're sitting up here in the front, this definition of dropping the ball says, drop the ball to make a mistake, especially by failing to take timely, effective, or proper action. Okay? That's what most of us feel like and think dropping the ball is, which is why we really don't want to do it. Okay? Over time, though, I came to appreciate dropping the ball. And I came up with a new definition, which is that dropping the ball is to release unrealistic expectations of doing it all, to engage others to achieve what matters most to us, and to deepen our relationships and enrich our lives. And that's the dropping the ball that I'm really encouraging all of us to embrace. Okay? I want to talk to you about three balls that I had to learn to drop. The first ball that I had to learn to drop was this really high expectation about who I was supposed to be. When my son was about a year, I was talking to my mom on the telephone, and I was having a lot of anxiety about a decision to go on a business trip. I felt in my heart of hearts that as soon as that plane took off, my son was going to start walking. And I didn't want to miss it. I wanted to be there for him when he took his first steps. And I was explaining this to my mom and asking her advice about whether or not I should go on the trip. And my mother said to me, "Tiffany, do you remember who was there when you took your first steps?" And I said, "Mommy, you've always been there for me. This is why this is really hard, and I really feel like I should be there for Kofi." She says, "Honey, slow down and just listen to my question." She says, "Do you remember who was there?" And I said, "Well, I guess no, I don't." She said, "That's my point, honey. Nobody remembers who was there when they took their first steps." She says, "If you're going to create the kind of change in the world that I think you could, you're going to have to get clear about what are the decisions you're making for you and what are the decisions you're making for other people. If you have some deep-seated reason why you want to be there when Kofi takes his first steps and you want to do that for you, that's beautiful. But you can't pretend that you're doing it for him because he won't remember. Trust me, no one does." And this was cognitive dissonance for me because I'll tell you, I had a lot of assumptions and beliefs about who I was supposed to be based on a lot of influences in my life. And if we had more time, and this was a workshop, I would ask you to do an exercise that I want to share with you that I really encourage all of you to do, which is to think about all of the roles that you play in your life. Okay, our first role as women is usually as a daughter. We're usually daughters first, right? Maybe you're a sister, a student, a worker, a friend, a wife, a mother. I want you to think about all of your roles, and I want you to ask yourself two questions in relationship to those roles. The first question is, what does a good ex do? What does a good sister do? What does a good friend do? What does a good citizen do? What does a good worker do? And when you write down everything that person does. The second question that I want you to explore in relationship to every single one of the roles that you occupy is, how do you know that that's what a good ex does? What is your evidence? What is your proof? The reason why these two questions are very important is because most of us, especially if we're smart and we feel that we're very powerful change agents in our own journeys, we feel that the decisions that we make are our choices, that the behaviors that we engage in, that the actions that we take are ours, that we're doing it on our own. But one of the things that I discovered is that a lot of what I wanted had nothing to do with me. It didn't originate with me. It came from me thinking about what my mother did, like when my expectation was that she must have been there when I took my first steps. You know, I never actually went back and asked her, "So were you there or not?" Right? But it also came from things like popular culture. Who recognizes this woman here? A lot of you. Okay, if you don't recognize this woman, it's an actress. Her name is Felicia Rashad, but she played a very popular TV mom named Claire Huxtable on the show that I grew up with called The Cosby Show. When I was growing up, I wanted to be Claire Huxtable, okay? She was fierce. Her hair always looked like this. She was always very well-dressed. Her makeup was flawless, like Beyoncé flawless. She had a clean home. Did you ever see an episode where there was anything misplaced in the home? No. She had five. You guys, she had five children. All of them were perfectly well-behaved. And on top of all that, she wasn't just an attorney. She made partner at her law firm in like the second season. Do you know that this is who I thought I was going to be? And it never occurred to me until many years later, when I couldn't do it all, that this was kind of far-fetched, right? How many of you know a woman who's perfectly well-dressed, perfect hair, perfect home, five perfectly well-behaved children who also can make partner at a law firm, right? Okay. Very, very difficult. And one of the things that I had to get clear about in order for me to get clear about who I was supposed to be was this one phrase and this one question around what matters most. And it's the most important question that I ask women. I have a vlog now, it's called Tiffany's Epiphanies, and I'm gonna show you one of the most popular episodes. And the reason why my vlog is really important is because I'm not a celebrity. I'm not Kim Kardashian. So whenever I post something, the only rationale for why it goes viral, this one had 5,000 views in about 4 hours. The only reason why it does is because women are responding and it's touching some kind of nerve. And so I want to share with you a little bit of this episode of Tiffany's Epiphanies, because in it, I provide a couple of exercises that I want you to just jot down to help you achieve clarity about what matters most to you so that we can move on to the next ball that we've got to drop. Yesterday, I was talking to a recent college grad who had reached out to me for help trying to figure out what her next step should be. Melissa had recently taken a job at a major accounting firm, and she was beginning to think that she had already made a really big mistake. She was utterly overwhelmed with all of the requests that were coming into her inbox from the partners in the firm, and two of her college roommates had already started a tech company. Melissa had her own entrepreneurial bug, and she was wondering whether or not she should go ahead and take the leap. As I was talking to Melissa, I had this epiphany. Our fear is not that we have too much to do. Our fear is that what we're doing doesn't matter to us. So often I talk to women who are in Melissa's shoes. They have a lot on their plate. They're trying to figure out what the next best step should be. And the first question that I always ask them is, what matters most to you? It's a big question, a pretty big daunting one, but there are a couple of exercises that I encourage people to take themselves through in order to figure out the answer. The first is an internal exercise. It's a funeral visualization that was made popular by Stephen Covey. Basically, you imagine at least three people in your life, a friend, a family member, a coworker, and you imagine them at your funeral talking about the impact that you've made in their life and in the lives of others. The second exercise you really need to get help from other people for. Just go to a few people who know you really well, but in different contexts, and ask them, when have you ever seen me at my best? And just listen to their responses, record them either with your phone or on paper. Then go back to the responses to both of the exercises, both your funeral visualization exercise and the answers that people gave to you about when they've seen you at your best, and look for the crossover, look for the phrases and the ideas and the concepts that mirror each other. That will begin to help you get at the heart of what your filter should be in thinking about your next step. For more on, I won't tell you what the more was. When I took myself through this process of figuring out what matters most to me, it became abundantly clear. What matters most to me personally is that I'm advancing women and girls. What matters most to me is that I'm nurturing a healthy partnership with my husband, and that I'm raising conscious global citizens. And part of the key of dropping the ball about who you're supposed to be is you taking yourself through some kind of exercise in which you uncover and discover what matters most to you. And that's important so you can get to the second ball that is really important to drop, which is this expectation about what you're supposed to do, certainly what I was supposed to do. A few years ago, I was doing what I thought was just gonna be a time management workshop with a bunch of women around prioritizing their to-do list. And so I asked them to start by just writing down all of the expectations about what they thought they should be completing in an ideal day. Everything from waking up in the morning, going to the gym, lying in bed thinking about going to the gym, getting dressed, preparing for meetings, every little thing until it was exhaustive. And then I asked them to write down next to their to-do list, and you can do this, how long do you think it would take you to do every single one of those items? And then I asked them to sum it. You know what I'm about to say, right? Not one woman in the room had a list that summed less than the 24 hours all of us have in a day, and only half the women have put sleep on their list, okay? And it hit me like a ton of bricks. It was another Tiffany's epiphany. Here we are walking around every day as if we're inadequate, as if there's something wrong with us because we can't get everything done. But what we're trying to get done is humanly impossible, right? It's humanly impossible. In order for us to address the to-do list, which is what, that's the biggest question I get. Tiffany, what ball am I supposed to drop? You keep talking about dropping the ball. What ball am I supposed to drop? That's different for every person. And the key to getting clear about what balls you can and should drop lead to what I call my drop the ball question. That in the beginning takes time for you to start using as a filter for your to-do list, but over time is a really important tool to narrow down and get clear about which balls you can drop. And the drop the ball question is basically, is whatever's on your to-do list, the task, my highest and best use to achieve what matters most? Now, I talked about what matters most and getting clear about that, but there's a new phrase in here, my highest and best use. And I want to talk about that just a little bit, because your highest and best use is essentially what you do very well with very little effort, not necessarily because you're a prodigy. It could just be that you do it very well with very little effort because you've done it a lot, combined with what only you can do. Okay? So for example, I shared with you that one of the things that mattered most to me was raising conscious global citizens. One of the things that I do really well with very little effort is coach people, helping other people to achieve clarity through guidance and encouragement, only because I do it all the time. One of the things that only I can do is instill values in my kids, okay? It's very hard to outsource the installation of values, okay? So my highest and best use in raising conscious global citizens is engaging my children in meaningful conversations every single day, no matter where I am in the world, okay? That's what I know that I need to do in order for me not to feel like I'm a bad mother. In my world, in my ecosystem, pretty much everything else I can drop the ball on. Now, the question then is, okay, but Tiffany, if, right, making a dentist appointment is not my highest and best use in raising conscious global citizens, what's going to happen to the dentist appointment? Okay? We get to that. I get to that in the book, because that's the part about engaging others, which really then leads to the third thing. And remember around your to-do list that what you do is far less important than the difference you make. You don't want to be at your funeral with people talking about you saying, you know, Sally got a lot of stuff done, okay? That's not really the point, okay? We really wanna focus on impact. I wanna move to the third ball, which is a really difficult ball for me to drop, which is this fear of asking for help. Worse than the fear of asking for help, I used to engage in this phenomenon that I call imaginary delegation. And I'm gonna play for you a little piece of my most popular vlog on imaginary delegation. Last Saturday, I was really annoyed with everyone in my house. Every weekend, they wake me up to, good morning, can you make us breakfast? And I get up, I head straight to the kitchen, and I throw down. I mean, buttermilk biscuits or scones from scratch, eggs, fruit salad, grits. I even fry bacon, and like there's a mutiny if there's no bacon. Now, I love that my family loves eating my food, but I really feel like the person who cooks shouldn't have to set the table or wash the dishes. So I was really annoyed when I announced breakfast will be ready in 10 minutes and everyone was in the same spot. Like my husband was in the same corner of his couch watching Formula One. The kids were sprawled all over their bedroom floor watching Word Girl on the iPad. And so I just thought, fine, I'll do it myself. And I started slamming the cutlery and the dishes on the table. Now, I thought that they had gotten my message when everyone came quietly to sit down at the table until my daughter looks at me and says, Mommy, what's wrong? And that's when I had this epiphany. It's easier for you to speak your mind than it is for other people to read your mind. Imaginary delegation is a tactic used by very busy women. It's basically when you assign someone a task, you fully expect them to complete the task, but you never tell them that you assigned it to them. Then, when common sense prevails and you think, well, I never actually told them to do it, you snap back at common sense, well, nobody ever had to tell me to do it. That is imaginary delegation. So here's what I want you to do, because the first step to defeating imaginary delegation is admitting imaginary delegation. The next time you walk into your office or your home and you think to yourself, why didn't anybody do, just fill in the blank, I want you to think to yourself, did I explicitly ask someone to do this? And if the answer is yes, did I ask them to repeat it back to me so that I could ensure that we communicated effectively? Remember, it's easier for you to speak your mind than it is for other people to read your mind. Now, one of the people that I've engaged meaningfully and that I talk about our journey in the book is my husband and helping me to achieve more by doing less. And one of the things that I've delegated to him is our kids' social calendar, which, by the way, managing takes up, I think, half of women's lives, unless you're a Black woman, for which if you have a daughter, braiding and cornrowing hair takes up the other half of your life. But it's been a life-changing experience because the bandwidth that I've been able to free from dropping the ball has allowed me to focus on what I call the four go-tos of advancing your leadership, which I never can start with because whenever I start with the four go-tos, the response I get is, okay, but I don't have time to do all this. Okay? But that's what dropping the ball is all about. They're not rocket science. You know all of them. Okay? The first is going to exercise. Okay? Building your stamina. It doesn't have to be complicated. Last night I danced to Shakira for like 40 minutes. Okay? You just got to move. The second is going to lunch. Building your network, building your ecosystem. Our leadership journeys are a team sport. I am standing here today as the cumulative investment of a lot of people, and it makes your life so much more easier. When you have mentors, when you have sponsors, when you have people that expend their political capital on you. I decided that I wanted to write a book. There are a lot of books that are published, and it's very hard to break through. But my book is doing really well, even though it doesn't release until Valentine's Day, because of the people who have supported the book. Gloria Steinem wrote the foreword to the book. On the front of the book, you'll see a blurb from Sheryl Sandberg. On the back of the book, you'll see a blurb from Anne-Marie Slaughter, from Adam Grant, from Mara Brock-Akil, from Soledad O'Brien, from Susan Cain. Okay. Taking the time to look up and go to lunch and breakfast and coffee and just interactions with people who can help you on your journey is incredibly important. The third go-to is going to events, raising your visibility. This for me was very hard before my drop the ball evolution, in large part because I always was concerned about childcare and I could never do anything at the last minute. And I felt like, you know what, I just need to focus on my work. I just need to focus on doing my job. What I didn't realize is that part of my job was differentiating myself from everybody else who was just focused on doing their job. And that's why any opportunity to be on a panel, any opportunity to be on a committee, any opportunity to differentiate yourself also makes your journey that much simpler. And the fourth go-to is going to sleep, which is the most difficult, hard, daunting go-to of all. But I really want you to take a look at the book because I talk about my strategies for how I get 8 hours of sleep a night, which is incredible. I spent 10 years getting far less than that and didn't realize that I had been exhausted for 10 years. Okay. Now, focusing on all of these things, particularly for women, investing time in your well-being, in your health, in your sleep, in your ecosystem, is a revolutionary act. It's a revolutionary act because the world has not yet evolved to support evolved women. Okay? The biggest example goes back to this birthday party that my daughter missed. I don't know if any of you are aware, but no one ever sends a child's birthday party invitation to their father. Sometimes I commit a little act of defiance and I respond back to the host, "Thank you so much for inviting Akua to the party. Her father is her calendar maven. Please forward the invitation to him." But on a lot of days, I'm relentlessly applying my drop the ball question. Is responding to the birthday party invitation my highest and best use in raising a conscious global citizen? And the answer is no, so I move to the next thing. And that's why sometimes she misses birthday parties. That day, I was sad that she missed the birthday party. I didn't feel guilty. I didn't do anything wrong. But this is my daughter, Akua. She loves donuts, especially donuts with pink frosting and sprinkles. And that night, I brought her one, and I gave her a hug because she was really sad about missing the party. And I read her favorite book, which is called Just Us Women. Okay. Now, in the 7 years that I've dropped the ball, I've been able to do a lot of things to advance women and girls. I ran the White House Project. We trained thousands of women to run for political office. I've raised millions of dollars for nonprofits. I've served on nonprofit boards. I even had the bandwidth to sit in coffee shops and write a book. Okay? And I'm at a point in my journey where if the work that I'm doing publicly is helping to create a world in which my Akua can aspire to be a CEO or to be a senator or to run her own empire, it's gonna have to be worth her missing a few birthday parties. Okay? This is my mom, Brenda. She found out she was pregnant with me when she was 19 years old, and that's me. My parents are from LA, they're from Watts, and I was conceived in the 1970s, so it was a rough place, it was a rough time. And my mom didn't know anything other than the environment around her, but she knew that she needed to do something different. And so she encouraged my dad, who was one of 11 kids, to join the Army. He had to kick a heroin addiction in order to even pass the physical exam. I was born at Fort Lewis Army Base in Tacoma, Washington, 9 months later. My parents were able to break a vicious cycle of poverty and addiction and violence in one generation because we live in the greatest country on the planet, despite everything that's going on right now. And they did that based on a fundamental truth, which is that if you want something that you've never had before, you're gonna have to do something that you've never done before in order to get it. I know that we have all our different choices. I know that it's very tough. And I used to say that the world didn't require all of the women who were in this room to aspire to be at the highest levels of leadership in order for us to accomplish our goals. But I have to tell you recently, I'm feeling a little bit different. I feel like we just don't have the luxury of not being leaders. If you're sitting in this room today and you're like, Tiffany, like those women in the audience, I get it, but I'm just trying to figure out how to get out of the house on time with everybody with the right backpack, I want you to check out Drop the Ball. I am so happy that I have a better answer to that question, right? Of how do you do it all? And I am really, really inspired and impressed by Watermark because this book doesn't come out for another few weeks. So the only way that you can get it is for you to get it here at the conference. And I've gotten so many signals that I need to be quiet. So I'm going to. Do we have time for... We have 10 minutes for Q&A. Yes. Does anyone have a question or an answer or a thought or anything? By the way, this the go-to about visibility and going to events, I just, in full disclosure, this is a perfect opportunity, right? If you are ever at a conference or an event, whenever the speaker is done and it's time for Q&A, you want to get up. You want to say your name in front of the whole room. You want to say what your role is. I know you're at EY. You're going to say what your role is, and then you're going to ask your question, okay? Because that's a way to build your visibility.
Hi, Tiffany and everyone. My name is Nicole Felix.
Oh, wait a second. He's got a... Everyone needs to hear your beautiful voice.
Hi, Tiffany and everyone, once again.
No. Yes. Come. Is this one working? Come up here. This is it.
Hi, Tiffany and everyone. My name is Nicole Felix. I'm an assistant director at Ernst & Young, focused on diversity and inclusion. It isn't a question, it's just a comment in regards to the great presentation, everything that I connected with in your presentation. And I literally heard women around me breathing and feeling freed based on your presentation. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, can I? Here we go.
Awesome. I'm Liz Blong, and I'm a lawyer at Intel. And this spoke volumes to me because I've had mothers at school who don't work outside the home, who come come up to me and say, I don't know how you do it all. And I say, I don't.
I don't. That's it.
But I wanted to say on the social calendar thing, my husband and I share an email address for all children related things. Our school has that one. All of the parents know that's the one to email. And that way we both are on tap. So I know if he's really busy at work, I can pick up and take care of things. And if I'm really busy, he does the same thing.
That's so awesome.
It's a great tip.
That's awesome. Yes. Any strategies?
Hi, my name is Christy Wood. I'm from Jazz Pharmaceuticals, a small biotech out in Palo Alto. I'm the mother of two young daughters, and I want to know, I think from your talk today, one thing I took away is kind of screw a lot of the birthday parties. I think something I want to do is I want to inspire my girls to be brave and be confident. And I have a daughter who's very much an introvert, and the other one's an extrovert. Any advice on how you inspire your children to be brave and confident women going forward?
Yeah, the most important thing you can do to inspire any girl to be a brave and confident woman is for you to be a brave and confident woman. Okay? They're watching you. They're watching you, and they're paying very close attention. The other thing that I say often, and this is just based on research, we do have a lot of women in leadership. Excuse me, not enough. And there's something that in the US in particular, that the vast majority of women who are in the highest levels of leadership have in common, for what it's worth. One, most of them were Girl Scouts. I don't think it's Girl Scouts per se, Girls Inc. works, but they were involved when they were young in some kind of leadership development experience. They largely spent some part of their academic experience at a girls' school or a women's college, so support those institutions. And the third is that they played organized sports. So if you just need a default, if your girls are either Girl Scouts or participate in Girls Inc., if at some point in their academic experience they attend an all girls or all women's institution and they play organized sports, you've got a pretty high chance, likelihood, that they're going to be confident, brave women.
Hi, my name is Moore Goldberger, and I work at DoorDash with the business operations team. And I was, thank you. It's a small tech company that does on-demand food delivery. So, quick plug. So I loved your presentation, and I was really inspired to drop. I was immediately kind of making lists of things I wanted to drop.
Yes.
But one thing that popped to mind that I'd love to hear your thoughts on is, how do you deal with the backlash of the people who don't want you to drop the balls that, you know, you may be planning on dropping?
Yeah, so this is the real challenging part. This is the only reason why it required an entire book, okay, to tell this whole story. Because what happens is that people are conditioned to whatever it is that you do, whatever it is that you say, and it's very, very difficult, especially in my core narrative, which was my marriage, to basically completely redefine the terms of this relationship that I had set up, in which I did all of these things. It was very challenging. But one of the things that I talk about in the book is delegating with joy. Delegating with joy is asking someone for help, but putting it into a larger context. So it's not, are you going to take out the recycling? Because you said you were going to take out the recycling, right? It's, you know what? I am really clear about what matters most to me. And what matters most to me, partly, is having a nurturing partnership with you. And I'm feeling like a lot of the things that I'm doing are not really laddering up to me having a nurturing relationship with you, me helping the kids to be conscious global citizens, me advancing women and girls. And I know it seems like so small relative, but do you think that you could like help me by taking out the recycling? Because, you know, you've always been there for me, and I know that you think I'm really a badass, but sometimes it's actually really hard. And can you just do that one thing? Like, I mean, who could say, you know, who's gonna say no to that? But there's way more in the book. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Raina. I'm a manager at Cisco. And what you just said, if I said that to my husband, he'd glaze over. Fine, I'll take it out. But my comment in question is kind of along those lines. Mm-hmm. At my house, there isn't indirect delegation. It's mm-hmm. not silent. It's very vocal. do this, 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 and this. There's a chart. But what I find is that I've had three other men, including my husband, that say, I don't delegate to my wife. So why would the wife be delegating to the husband? How do you answer that to the husband? They don't feel like they have to. These are all the things I have to get done. Let's get them done. So that's the question to you.
Yeah, it's a big question. So here's the thing. The book is called Drop the Ball. It's not called Getting Other People to Pick Up the Ball. Okay? And the reason why it's called Drop the Ball is because, well, why would anyone pick up a ball if it's already picked up? So the reason why I start there is because in my own personal journey, what I discovered is that everyone else around me did have a threshold, unbeknownst to me, for disarray, for disorder. It's just that their threshold was way different from mine. And that if I could drop the ball first, and if I could maintain enough discipline, which was very, very difficult for me, to just see it all sitting there, that even sometimes without me delegating, it would actually happen. It would actually get done. But that it requires a huge mind shift. This is not easy. You know, when Cheryl said, make your partner a partner, remember that? Yes. And we all said amen to that. And then we all went home and put in another load of laundry. You know? it's very difficult work, and it's daunting work. And I'm more than happy to talk to you more about it. But it starts with us. It really does start with us. I'm so sorry. Oh, we have 1 minute. Okay.
I think you somewhat answered the question. My name is Michelle Brown. I'm a inside sales manager at Pure Storage. And I was going to ask, you know, I have people that, I have an 11-year-old and a 1-year-old, and I co-parent that 11-year-old. And I don't know if I want to drop that ball. But there are other people in the family, potentially, that might want to take the ball from me, and I don't know if I want to give them that ball either. How do you reconcile that? How do you get through something like that? I mean, it may not be the exact situation, but something similar.
Yeah. So I think what's really important, and why I always start with what matters most, is because sometimes we have things that are important to us, but we haven't really analyzed what is required of us in order for us to achieve what we hope for in relationship to that, right? So before I got clear about what mattered most to me, I just had this goal that I just wanted to be a really good mom. Right? But I hadn't really explored and analyzed, well, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean that I need to pick them up every day? Does that mean that I need to be there when they take their first steps? What is the role that physical presence plays in relationship to that? Because, you know, there are a lot of moms in this country who have to work really hard, long hours, in order to provide for their children. Are we saying that they're bad moms because they're not physically there? So that's why, you know, if what you really want to do is be a really good parent to that child, the core tenet is figuring out what exactly does that mean to you, and really defining that for yourself, as opposed to defaulting to what Claire Huxtable did, or what your parents did, or what someone else is saying. And that's really it. I'm gonna go, if you didn't get your question answered or you wanna reach out to me, I'm Tiffany at tiffanydufu.com. It's very easy to get a hold of me. And I'm also going to sign books, so we can talk then. Oh, I should go the other way. Thank you, everyone.